You don't have to travel far to find people who do not have permanent homes making temporary ones in the countryside. We've gotten used to seeing camps of tents and other items belonging to homeless people. We've also gotten used to seeing those camps disappear periodically and generally not by the choice of the people living there. Police and other public workers go in from time to time and clear out homeless camps. The camp cleanouts have been controversial in many places where they've left homeless people still homeless and without some of their possessions. We invited two people who work with homeless populations in the Rogue Valley to talk about the issue. Julie Akins is a newly inaugurated Ashland City Council member, a journalist, and a provider of services to homeless people in the Valley. Julie Akins, thanks for joining us again on The Exchange.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
Matthew Vorderstrass is with us as well. He's the development director at Rogue Retreat. Matt, good to see you back in the studio.
Thank you for having me.
Let's take time to take a bit of an overview about the kinds of things you do, because I was reminded as you came into the room, Matt, about the fact that it is winter. It's been a little hard to remember that lately, but there are some services that have been provided for homeless people in the Valley because it's winter. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, well, I know that in Medford we have the Kelly Shelter, which is a winter warming shelter that the city has allowed us to establish at the United Methodist Church there. And so with that, we're able to shelter up to 50 people per night within the Kelly Shelter, and we've been open since December 1st of last year. And in that time, we've already moved over five people into more permanent forms of housing from there with the case management work that we have embedded within the shelter. And then also we have a peer support specialist that we have working down there that has also enrolled about 40 individuals into OHP and helping them get insurance and other benefits. So it's been a long month so far, or month and a half so far, and we're just enjoying the good work that we're doing and also helping raise awareness about the needs for shelters. And then I also know that we also have more shelter options that are available here in Ashland as well.
Well, straight dovetail into what Ashland provides. Julie Akins.
Hi. We don't provide that much. We do. There's some things that are in the works. There are some folks, ORA, Options for Housing, for Ashland residents, and they do provide some shelter in churches right now. And later they will have a more fixed facility, or they hope so, on East Main, where 35 people can be regularly. There are still some folks out in the cold, and we don't really have a lot of options. Right now the temperature is 20 degrees that triggers the emergency shelter. We're working on trying to get that temperature up to 30 or 32 degrees, so it's a little more humane, because 20 degrees is really about the lowest, about the lowest in the state as a threshold. So we're working on fixing that. We have our bus project, but that's just one family, and that's for children and families. So we're working on having more options, but Rogue Retreat is a great model in terms of having tiny houses and lots of different facilities for homeless people in the Medford area. Ashland's a bit more limited, as you know.
Even with the cold weather shelters, Ashland's limited. Is it still five nights a week?
I don't know for sure. I think it's I do believe it is five nights a week. It rotates between churches, mm-hmm. so there's no one fixed location, which also makes it difficult for folks to kind of figure out where to be and when. So, yeah.
It sounds like one of the advantages, though, Matt Vorderstrass, is that if you have people even in temporary shelters for a night or a few nights, you have a chance to get with them to talk about longer-term services.
Yeah. No, and that's actually, one of the key ingredients with what we do at Rogue Retreat and what I also know that other programs do. It's really the case management that is done. I mean, when you're providing shelter and housing, you're providing a basic need. And so when you're able to provide that basic need, you can help bring people out of crisis. But then it's the case management that you end up placing on top of that, where you develop a relationship with that case manager and they help you with action planning and goal planning that really helps to move people beyond the boundaries that oftentimes led to their homelessness.
I imagine you run across people who have been in camp cleanouts.
Well, certainly.
Uh-huh. And is it something that happens on a periodic basis? I mean, is it sort of irregular? I mean, can you give us a sense of what it's like in Medford in particular?
Well, in Medford in particular, you have a lot of people that are camping on the Greenway. And so oftentimes you'll have the police and local agencies doing Greenway sweeps. And I will say that the police have, in many cases, gotten a lot better because they will be bringing other partner agencies with them. So when they're doing the sweeps, they're also have people with them that are oftentimes providing information to the homeless. But it has been a regular occurrence in Medford for several years. And oftentimes what we end up finding is that if somebody was illegally camping on the Greenway and they didn't move their stuff, they would oftentimes lose their stuff. It would get tossed into a dumpster, and oftentimes you'd have people losing vital birth records because of that, losing mental health medications or other medications. And it just, when you're already homeless and you already don't have enough and don't have stability, when you lose those other pieces, it just sets you back even further. And so what it ends up doing is digging a deeper hole that is harder for people to get out of.
Is there any notice or warning given before the camps are cleaned out?
Oftentimes the police will give a warning to social service agencies, and then those agencies then relay the messages to the homeless individuals that they're working with.
But it sounds like there's a potential for some people not to get the message.
There is a potential.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. And so well, from what you're saying here, it sounds like there are people who weren't aware and weren't prepared.
In certain cases.
Mm-hmm. Are there some cases where people have had a chance to just kind of pick up and move on and take their stuff with them?
Oh, certainly. You run across them all the time. Oftentimes, too, you find that people that are still camping on the Greenway have gotten better at isolating themselves away from everybody to where they just don't draw a lot of attention to themselves. And sometimes those are some of the most successful campers that I've seen in those situations where they're able to at least have a location that they're sleeping at for a period of time. But those are few and far in between. And oftentimes when you're in that situation, generally you're losing everything that you have.
Matt Vorderstrass is with Rogue Retreat. He's the development director. Julie Akins is a member of the Ashland City Council, a journalist who's covered homeless issues for quite some time now, and also a service provider to homeless people through her school bus project. You can join the conversation on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Julie Akins, have you had much exposure to camp cleanouts in your travels?
I have in my travels, and I do need to say I'm not speaking for the city council in this conversation. I learned last night as a new counselor, I have to say that every time, so I want to make that clear.
Okay.
Yes, I have had experience with this, just traveling up and down the coast and visiting various homeless camps where sweeps come through and people don't get notice. They are supposed to get some sort of 48-hour notice, and they often don't. And also car campers are supposed to receive notice that they're not supposed to be in a given location, and they often don't as well. And as Matt says, I can affirm people will lose things that are really valuable to them. And when you're doing a sweep, you may not know that that's somebody's very important thing that may keep them alive. You know, sometimes people have to use all sorts of things, cardboard, which can be replaced, plastic bags that they have to put over all their stuff, their sleeping bags, their extra warm socks and things like that. And if they're in a pile, the people who are doing the sweep, primarily police agencies, will just throw it away. And they're really not supposed to. They're supposed to hold it so people can come and pick it up. But they may not know the difference between trash and somebody's actual survival gear, and that happens to people somewhat frequently. I understand the difficulty in the juxtaposition. I know that the Greenway is supposed to be a recreational trail, and people don't want a lot of rubbish around it. And I get the need to clean it up, but yet we're talking about the survival of a human being. What really needs to happen is people need to have an adequate place to sleep, and then we don't have this interface issue. You know what I mean?
I do, and I was going to ask you about the disconnect between how the owners see this stuff in the camps versus the people clearing them out. And you've kind of hit on a bit of this already, where it looks like one person's trash is another person's necessary implement.
Yeah, exactly. I think as you're going through, and I haven't actually done a sweep myself, I've been on the other end of it. There was a situation in Portland where they went through and actually took bulldozers and just went right through the camp and tore up all the tents and everything else.
Springwater Carter?
Yeah, mm-hmm. It was pretty horrible. And then I went up there after that happened and talked to people, and they were in pretty deep trauma, fearing that it would happen again. Because your tent is your house if you're in that situation. So everything contained in there, vital records, medicines, you know, and replacing a sleeping bag and replacing outdoor gear, you know, warm gear, is really difficult when you have no money. So taking these things could actually be the difference between survival and not survival. And people do freeze to death out there. So I do think we need some sort of a better way of clarifying what's okay to move and what isn't. And a better notice. I think just word of mouth or putting one sign up, it's not going to be enough to let somebody know they're going to lose their possessions.
Have you seen examples of things that could be improved upon in Medford sweeps?
Well, I think just advance notice in many cases, but I also think that if with the issue that we currently have with the homeless community, because we obviously do see that it's growing because of the housing crisis that we're currently in, is rather than just saying that you can't be here and you can't be here, I would like to see us move in a direction where we create a zone where people can safely go where they need to camp. I think that it would be wise as communities in Southern Oregon for us to designate safe areas where homeless can set up small tent cities to a certain extent. Obviously, we're going to want some kind of program to be in place to be able to do outreach to those areas, but that would at least be a move in the right direction. So that we're no longer penalizing people for being homeless. Instead, we're providing a safe place, and we're also providing a place where the organizations doing the work with the homeless can go to find them.
You hit on a major issue there, which is that when there is opposition to people being in a certain place, the idea is, we'll get out of here, mm-hmm. you know, don't be here. Mm-hmm. But there never seems to be a good answer for, well, then where should I be?
Yeah, it's really no different than when I'm cleaning my house and I keep moving one pile of stuff from one location to the other. It's basically just moving the mess that I don't want to address. And really in this situation, the mess that we don't want to address is the fact that we have a lack of affordable housing. And rather than just excluding a population of people that are suffering as a result of it, instead we need to focus more on proactive solutions to where we can help more people.
We're talking about homelessness and particularly homeless camp cleanouts with Matt Vorderstrass, the development director at Rogue Retreat, Julie Akins, who is not speaking for the Ashland City Council, but is a member of the Ashland City Council herself, also a journalist and an occasional service provider to homeless people. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange. Your thoughts, your comments, your questions, your own experiences in this area. Join us at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Now, Julie, I know it's just the middle of January and you're very new to the Ashland City Council, but have you been able to kindle some discussions about homeless service provision, or at least the city's attitude toward homelessness?
It's certainly one of my major goals. February 4th, we will have in our study session a conversation about raising that temperature to 30 or 32 degrees. And the reason for that is, let's get it on the record and get it official. And then from there, let's start getting some greater interest around helping out. One of the things that ORA, who is charged with doing that, providing service for people, is they don't often get enough volunteers to stay the night, and you have to have two people in a shelter overnight. So they need some help getting folks in there. But we need to codify it. We need to say that we care about this, that we just don't want people to freeze to death. It's not enough. I mean, it's clearly not enough. We need living wage jobs, and we need places, safe places, where people can go. I was in a municipal court room witnessing one day, and a person got up and said, they told me to leave, and I asked where I should go, and they said, not here, but I have to be somewhere. And that really resonated with me. We need some safe place for people to go. We complain about rubbish, but we don't have enough trash cans. We complain that people go to the bathroom outside, but we lock all of the bathrooms in the evening. And where are they? And then we complain that there are homeless people on the street, but they don't have anywhere else to be. If we don't want that problem, then give people a place to be while we work on systemic inequality and poverty. So I totally affirm what Matt is saying there. We need some good car camping programs and potentially some places where people in tents can be legally.
Let's go ahead.
No, and I also want to add, too, that we, as the community has become more aware of this, one of the things that we are noticing is that different communities are becoming more willing to begin addressing these issues and to having these bigger discussions. So that is one thing that is that I see as positive that's happening at the moment. We just need more of it.
It seems that there's a greater discussion of mental health, too. In fact, the more I read the letters to the editor lately, it seems that there are more people discussing mental health in terms of homelessness, which is not to say that all homeless people have mental illness issues, mm-hmm. but there are some. Mm-hmm. Also, the fact that there's mental illness behind bars, mm-hmm. in jail and prison quite often, and these are not appropriate places to be dealing with mental health issues necessarily. But, I mean, does it seem like the pieces are beginning to come together? As you've been working with Rogue Retreat for several years now, have you noticed a change in attitude in the community generally?
Well, over the past several years, there's become an increased awareness around mental health issues. And a lot of that, I believe, is due to the advent of CCOs and the expansion of availability of treatment for mental health issues. That opened up the window on a large population of individuals that were suffering that didn't have a voice and that all of a sudden could access services. And so over the past few years, with the movements that Jackson County Mental Health has done, I think the community's become more open to those conversations. And as a result, we've seen more collaborations to develop more resources for mental health housing. But within our programs at Rogue Retreat, we also still see a number of literally homeless individuals that are suffering from serious and persistent mental illness. And oftentimes what we have to do is then partner with mental health providers because we're not equipped to be able to give them the care that they really need. But we can provide them the shelter and the safety and then connect them to the resources that are really going to be able to help them.
You mentioned the CCOs, the Coordinated Care Organizations, that
yes.
help provide the Oregon Health Plan in Oregon. So you mentioned getting people on OHP earlier from, mm-hmm. from having had them in the Kelly Shelter. So that would seem like that's a step in the right direction
it
to
is.
Get people some care, body, mind, whatever. They're all covered.
Absolutely. You know, and part of that, too, is when we're able to help people get enrolled in health insurance, we're also able to help them then connect with a primary care provider so that we also stop the revolving door of individuals going into the emergency room, which we also know is one of the drivers of healthcare costs. And so we're also saving the community money by doing that at the same time by helping people properly utilize their healthcare and health insurance.
Well, let's take a call here on the Jefferson Exchange. Here is Brian in Ashland. Welcome to our discussion of homelessness and camp cleanouts with Matt Vorderstrass and Julie Aikens. Hi, Brian.
Hi, thanks for taking the call. You know, you constantly hear from specials on the homeless, so they say repeatedly, just give us a secure space, give us some bathrooms and a dumpster, and we can actually self-manage. The problem is where to find the space, yet Jackson County has this enormously big space called the Fairgrounds. I'm just kind of curious why some of the advocacy and agency groups haven't pushed hard to make that a reality. It's secure. It wouldn't suffer from NIMBYism at all. It's out there by itself. And you could then deliver the services and actually create a space. And the county already owns it, I think. So any comments on that? Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Brian. Appreciate it. Matt Vorderstrass, the county fairgrounds, the expo park in Central Point. He's right. There's no particular close neighbors or anything like that.
Yeah. No, and that is a great point. And I know that we have had conversations with the county in the past in regard to establishing a year-round shelter within the county. And I know at one point when we were working to establish Hope Village, we were looking at property right near the fairgrounds because of that location. But I can't necessarily speak for at the time for why the county wasn't really involved in identifying the site or being able to utilize the fairground location. I think that would definitely be a conversation that we'd need to volley towards the county.
And Hope Village ended up setting up on city property, is that right, in North Bedford?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Was that also easier to do, partly because it was publicly owned and also because I don't think there are any near neighbors to that property either?
It was mostly industrial in that area. The property behind Hope Village is the fuel area where the city's fleet vehicles go to get their fuel and everything, so it's not a heavily residential area.
Julie Aikens, have you had any examination on your own part before or since joining the city council about chunks of public property in the city that might be useful for encampments?
Yeah, I actually have been thinking quite a bit about that, but I haven't really shared this with my colleagues or anybody. It's been on my mind. There's a parcel that the city recently purchased with an eye toward doing a dog park. And I've been kind of looking at it and thinking it might be better used for housing. But I haven't really brought that up to anyone else. So I'm sort of blindsiding anybody who hears this. But, yeah, I have my eye on that. I think we do need to identify parcels where people can go either temporarily or permanently. Clearly, there are places around the city where that might be doable. You know, there's a zoning process and everything else. But I tend to think that it's important to put people near bus lines and public transportation, which might be part of the hitch in the get-along with a lot of places. And I also wanted to speak a little bit toward the mental health issue you were talking about. You know, Housing First is a really great model because once you house people and stabilize them, some of the mental health issues tend to dissipate or even go away. More than 70% of people who are without a house are not actually technically mentally ill. It's a fairly small percentage. Those people who are homeless are experiencing trauma, though, on a daily basis. It's really hard not to have any voice, to be sitting on a sidewalk and have someone come up and ask you for your ID over and over or want to check your backpack. It's pretty scary. And those interfaces need to be improved, I think, in all our communities. So just speaking to that, I do think that's a critical issue for everybody. And I do think we need to identify plots of land. And actually, if anyone has any ideas around plots of land in Ashland, let us know. There may be some way to have a public-private partnership. That's been on my mind. If someone has a parcel and they're willing to lease it at a low cost, maybe that's an option. or even donate it. It's a good idea. We need a place for people to be. We're exploring car camping. That's been on the agenda for a while, and that's something that I'll be bringing up again, safe and legal place to park your car if you're living in it.
Eugene has done that. Have you had a chance to talk to people involved in the program there?
I have, yeah. They do it in small groups. So rather than having like a large 20 and 30 person car camping program, they'll have three spaces here, four spaces there. And they partner with businesses to do that and allow people to be there overnight and sort of also act as watch people. So, and it seems to be pretty successful. Eugene has a lot of innovative ideas that I'd like to borrow for sure. And that's one of them.
Okay. Folks in Eugene listening, make sure that the Ashland City Council hears from you. I want to come back to the cleanouts that happen on these properties occasionally. Are there laws that govern what the police and other agencies can do when they clean out a homeless camp?
Yes. Yes, there are. Sorry, I was sipping coffee. They do have to give notice, and they are supposed to hold your items so that you can come and pick them up for a period of time. What often happens, though, is, as we mentioned earlier, folks don't get the notice. They don't see the sign. They aren't hearing from people in social services, and so they don't know. Also, what tends to happen is they may not go and pick up their items because they don't know they're entitled to them. And a lot of homeless people have a fear around interfacing with policing agencies. Mm-hmm. So they don't want to go to the cop shop and ask for their old sleeping bag because they're fearing what will happen. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, as I said, agencies don't know that that's somebody's survival line, and they throw it away.
All right,
but
we have
there
an email
are laws
here.
About it.
All right, there's an email here from Anne, No Town Given. She says, I notice how much personal property displaced folks have to lug around from place to place and the danger of having their possessions looted. She wants to know if there's a model of combination lockers for homeless in some communities, and also says we need to provide more public restrooms and showers available for displaced persons. So a couple of ideas there for how to help people along when they're homeless. Anne, thanks for that. Julie Akins from the Ashland City Council, not speaking for the council. Thank you for joining us. Matt Vorderstrass from Rogue Retreat, good to see you as well. Thanks
for
joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.